south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, since the advent of the internet and smartphones and all that, the way gringos and expats learn their Spanish has changed immensely. It used to be when I first got down here, it was cassettes. Then CDs, then online, then Google Translate, which has turned out to be more than a crutch than anything. I'll tell you another thing, too. Usually, after you've been down here a while, a couple of years, you start getting confident. Your Spanish starts picking up, and you realize you can communicate with people, at least with some people. After all, Latin America is a very big place, and there are lots of accents and dialects. And then there's all that slang on the street, too. Every country's got its own slang. And often one country's slang doesn't work very well in another. Anyway, the usual pattern is once you're down here a year or two or three, even five, like me, I'm a kind of a language dunce, and I never took Spanish in high school or college. One of the big mistakes of my life, I took French instead. Ha ha. C'est la vie. Anyway, just when I thought I was getting pretty good at it, I'd constantly get slapped in the face, get kicked back into reality. You know, two steps forward, one step back. Especially when watching a Hollywood movie on TV and trying to read the subtitles. Now, I'm flashing back a few years now, before Netflix. What I mean is, and I think every gringo and expat has tried this, not anymore today, but back in the 90s and the 2000s. What you do is watch a Hollywood movie on TV and turn the sound down and try to read just the subtitles. In Spanish, of course. See if you could figure out what's going on. It wouldn't take long, not even a minute sometimes, to realize you just weren't picking up on it at all. Happened to me a lot. Pretty discouraging, really. And then when you turn the sound back up and it's in English and you try to follow the translation rolling across the bottom of the screen, you realize that was pretty hit and miss too. And then eventually there'd come that hallelujah moment where you realized the translations were wrong. Though not completely. In other words, whoever took that movie and did the original translations and put them on the screen, they were not doing literal word-for-word translations at all. Though they got it right enough times to get the rough idea across. When I discovered it, that's when I finally realized it does a gringo expat no good at all. In fact, it confuses the hell out of you if you try to learn your Spanish that way. It became that one step backward thing. However, the odd thing is it works very well in reverse. In other words, it's a great way for Latinos to learn their English. I can't tell you how many Latinos I've run into over the years who speak pretty good English, even mixed with some of the popular slang. I mean, acceptable slang. Slang that's not necessarily crude, coarse, or vulgar. Nope, I'm not talking about that coarse street slang you hear in Mexico that's a combination of Spanish, English, and all the vulgar swear words in between. Sorry to say, that's sort of English of the lowest common denominator. They call it mojado English down here. It's the kind of English you hear from Latinos down here in Latin America who've been up in the States illegally for a while and then suddenly, or not so suddenly, get deported. Man, I'll tell you, I can spot them by their lingo in about 10 seconds. It's not at all the kind of English you learn in school or from books or from any structured online course. It's a kind of very bad English they learn on the streets of big cities like L.A. It's beyond atrocious and sort of instantly stereotypes that person. As harsh as it sounds, you can instantly figure out that guy's background, as well as his social, cultural, and educational status, too. All right. I can hear the wokesters whining now. Johnny, you can't say that. Generalizing and stereotyping people is a no-no. But then again, Johnny, you are a white guy, so what can we expect? It's a typical entitled white guy racist response. Yeah, well, it won't be the first time I caused a bunch of seething, spit-bubbling wokesters to pop a neck artery. In my defense, I have two words. Tough titties. Hey, that's life. The human race has learned to live and survive by stereotyping and generalizing. Let's face it, if you were walking down the street and you saw a block up ahead, a pack of dogs rummaging through some garbage, would you just keep walking straight ahead towards them or would you cross the street? Nope, instinctively, you'd stereotype and generalize, just to be safe. Same thing goes for if you were walking down the street towards a group of young guys with face tattoos, big-ass chains, and gold teeth. You'd definitely want to cross the street, especially if you were a female. Oops, but that's another one of those evil white guy stereotypes now, isn't it? But I digress, as usual. And so early in the show, too. Are you thinking maybe Johnny's having a bad day or got up on the wrong side of the bed? Could be, folks. Could be. Now, where were we? Oh, yeah. I was saying that Hollywood movie Spanish subtitle translation thing as a viable or adjunct method to learn Spanish did not work well for me, and many gringos found that out early on. Because the subtitles weren't technically word by word or phrase by phrase correct, though they conveyed the general idea of the scene, but that did no good if you were trying to learn your Spanish that way. Just confused the hell out of you even more. But in reverse, it worked great. In other words, Latinos who wanted to learn their English correctly, even with some of the popular slang thrown in, which you're not going to get from books or courses, didn't matter. All Latinos had to do to learn their English that way, back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, was to watch a Hollywood movie that was dubbed in Spanish and read the English subtitles below. Those English subtitles were very nearly correct. Yep, you see, the thing is, for the last, I'd say, 30 or even 40 years now, that means up till maybe 10 years ago, you could turn on your TV down here in Latin America or go to the cinema, and every movie and TV show had Spanish subtitles and the audio was in English, the regular soundtrack, just as it was filmed and recorded in Hollywood. But these days, just in the past 10 years or so, things have changed drastically. And since the advent of Netflix, especially since the advent of Netflix, everything, and I mean everything that comes out of Hollywood, whether it's TV or movies, is automatically translated into Spanish. Latinos no longer have to depend on subtitles at all. They get everything in Spanish audio. Now, of course, with Netflix, and everybody has Netflix here, you can get subtitles in English and Spanish too. So, for example, when I'm at some Latino's house and Netflix is on, it's almost always on, you'll find the audio is always in Spanish, and sometimes they'll have subtitles in English, just to learn what they can or what they can pick up, because everyone wants to learn English here. And when they do that, once again, the audio in Spanish matches almost word for word the translation in English. So it's an easy way for them to pick up their English. Eventually, it does rub off. It's got to. However, once again, beware, it does not work in reverse. That means if your Spanish sucks, no matter how much Netflix you watch with Spanish subtitles, when all is said and done, your Spanish will still suck. It can be quite frustrating. Though again, you'll get the generalities of the scene they're depicting. Still, you can count on the fact that the English audio and the Spanish subtitles will not exactly match. Sometimes they'll be way off. So beware of that big pitfall. Now, oddly enough, by chance, during the COVIDian thing, I happened to be in Mexico City. I had a 4-hour layover at the airport. I was sitting next to a guy, a 30-something Latino guy, who was almost constantly talking on the phone, sometimes in English, sometimes in Spanish, and his English was pretty good. Eventually, he took a break from his babbling, and we got to talking a bit. And of course, when you're stuck talking to a stranger, you almost always end up with the "what do you do for a living?" question. Turns out, this guy worked at the actual place in Mexico City that does 90-something percent of all the Hollywood movie translations into Spanish. So I found out through this guy, Miguel, practically all the English movies and TV shows coming out of the States get their Spanish voiceover track recorded at the studio where he works. In fact, he said they have 35 professional full-time voiceover artists on staff. That means that only 35 people are responsible for all the voices you hear if you're listening to a Hollywood movie or TV show in Spanish, like on Netflix. But I kind of knew that already, because I remember a show I did probably 6 or 7 years ago now. I was talking about being at a get-together at a Latina's house. That was way before Netflix was available here in Latin America. At the time, it was only in English, so why would it come down here? Though I remember down here, it was gringos and expats that were the first early adopters. They'd get it through their account up in the States somehow. Now, where were we? Oh yeah, back at the party. Anyway, I remember the TV was on in the background. It was tuned into the retired Big Assians, dubbed in Spanish, no subtitles. And it was just recently dubbed in Spanish. The early retired Assian shows, I remember, were in English with Spanish subtitles. Same thing when Ozzy Osbourne had his reality show and the Girls of Playboy. Remember that? All those reality shows that were pretty popular between the year 2000 and maybe 2007. They were syndicated down here too, only about 6 months to a year late. Not dubbed in Spanish, but with Spanish subtitles. Anyway, at the particular party I'm referring to at that Latina's house, something strange was afoot. Now, remember, this is when they first started dubbing it in Spanish. I remember one of the girls saying, "Kim retired Ashian's voice. was the very same voice as one of the ladies in a famous soap opera going on at that time. Obviously, then, it was the same voiceover lady doing both voices. In other words, the so-called artist had no vocal variety. A one-trick pony. Some artist, huh? But that's not all. According to the Latina who was given the party, her voice, that same voice, turns up in lots of TV shows and movies. Every voiceover job she did sounded the same. And I asked the girl that brought it up, isn't that annoying? She said, not really. Details, details, huh? That's not too cool. It's as if George Clooney, Brad Pitt, and Arnold Schwarzenegger all had the same voice. Could you handle that? You know, it's just those kinds of things that distance the first world from the third world. And if you're not convinced, just compare her to that world-famous but long-dead voiceover artist, Mel Blanc. He was known in Hollywood as the man of a thousand voices. It even says so on his tombstone. You know, the voice of Bugs Bunny and Pepe Le Pew, Porky Pig, Woody the Woodpecker, Yosemite Sam, Quick Draw McGraw, El Cabong, Elmer Fudd. In fact, he did all the Warner Brothers cartoons and had hundreds of voices he could turn on and off at the drop of a hat. Meanwhile, back at the airport, when I was speaking to this Mexican voiceover guy, by the way, he was a sound mixing engineer over there. He wasn't one of the so-called voiceover artists. Artistas. That's a stretch, sort of like rap or reggaeton artist. Yeah, right. They're as much true artists as that elephant in the news who paints pictures with his trunk. Anyway, I had an interesting conversation with the guy. He finally set me straight about something I should have figured out a long time ago. Maybe it's Alzheimer's kicking in, I don't know. You see, when I brought up my complaint about me trying to learn Spanish that way through dubbed and translated movies, when I told him it was almost impossible for me because most of the translations were not right. Well, he straightened me out on that, and now when I watch a movie translated like that, I cut those guys a lot of slack. I used to think the people doing those translations and the people writing the script for those translations were ninnies and pinheads. Turns out I was half wrong. They were just pinheads. Well, as it turns out, there's sort of a delicate balance. He put it like this. If you're watching a character in a film speaking in English, for every word or phrase he says, his lips will only move for a very precise period of time. For example, hey you, what are you doing? Come over here. For that phrase, his lips moved for 2.5 seconds. Then he says, it's our job at the studio to translate that into Spanish and dub it. But we've only got 2.5 seconds where his mouth moves to fit in our translated phrase. And often a direct translation won't cut it. We have to pick an alternate translation with a similar meaning that'll fit in that 2.5 seconds. I thought, aha, now I get it. He said it's bad enough the translated words do not quite fit with the mouth movements. It would be a terrible disaster if words came out and the lips weren't moving at all. But then he said, get this, and he laughed a bit. He said, if every American actor was a dumb and silent type like Vin Diesel or Sylvester Stallone, lots of facial expressions, one-syllable words, they say no and grunt a lot. He said, no problem. Anyone could do those guys, even with a hangover. But he says when it comes to sophisticated comedy, English costume dramas and Shakespeare, even veteran voiceover guys will lose a little sleep the night before. So that's what goes on behind closed doors at those voiceover studios. All right, changing gears. You know, I get emails here and there asking me about El Salvador and the Bitcoin experiment over there. People want to know what's it like there with boots on the ground. Well, as you've probably been seeing, all lamestream media has been poo-pooing it and saying it's a huge failure. You've got all the published rags, too, like the Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, Barron's, The Economist, etc., etc., calling it a stupid move, even calling their president, Bukele, a clueless idiot. They say he's leading the country to rack and ruin. Well, the thing is, you know, lamestream media hates Bitcoin because it's a huge threat to banksters and central governments. And their advertisers, many of whom are traditional banks, obviously hate it too. I know, most of you knew that already. The thing is, how can you get the straight dope from people who've never been down there and lived there any length of time to see how it's working? Well, I can tell you this, I've been there many times. It's not at all what the lamestream media has been telling you either. In fact, I cringe at the smear articles they write. They're really pathetic. And that's just what they are, smear articles. The fact is, even though Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies in general have crashed 60, even 70%, El Salvador's experiment has not failed. It won't be the last nation either to adopt it. And really, what third world country or fourth world African country wouldn't consider Bitcoin in a world of inflation, in some cases hyperinflation, and failed fiat currencies? Oh, and by the way, you know that financial news service, Bloomberg. You know, they've been putting out Bitcoin and El Salvador hit pieces practically weekly ever since Bitcoin hit the map. Now, here's what you didn't know, and it makes all the sense in the world. Bloomberg is a World Economic Forum, that's WEF, official partner. Look it up. You know, the WEF, that's Klaus Schwab's baby. They're the ones in charge of bringing you the one world government and one world economic system, including a proposed one world digital currency. All that stuff, of course, is a total anathema to Bitcoin, cryptos, and any mention of an alternative banking system. So is there any wonder Klaus Schwab's boys put out weekly hit pieces on Bitcoin in El Salvador? It's no surprise that big government and big bankster-supported services like Bloomberg would write hit pieces against Salvador's president, Bukele, either, since he's got the balls in interviews to slam the Fed and inflation, the Fed's money-printing machine, the IMF and the World Bank, the bankster-industrial complex, and Biden. Isn't it funny that all these bought and paid for news services that slam El Salvador and Bukele, they never talk about how tourism is up 20% year over year, even with the COVID idiot thing. Remittances flowing back to the country are up 10%. Construction projects are at all-time highs. Employment's at an all-time high, too. I've seen it myself. Everywhere you drive, you see cranes, earth movers, and construction projects everywhere. And the notion that 1 to 2% maximum of the country's treasury having gone down because of the drop in Bitcoin. The idea in the lamestream media that it's some kind of huge failure on the part of the country and President Bukele. Well, that's just wrong, considering at the same time, the country is experiencing the highest GDP increase in its history, too. How could that be? And unlike every other Latin American country, including the U.S. and Europe, too, they never even had a negative blip in GDP during the whole COVID thing, either. The idea that the president's investing in Bitcoin has put Salvador on the ropes is just laughable. There's a huge boost in tourism, construction, air flights are all full. Plus, young local Salvador kids are learning all about crypto blockchain in schools and actually getting good tech jobs in the blockchain and crypto space. I say give them about 3 more years and then try to tell me it's a failure. Me and a lot of my much smarter buddies are thinking, in a couple of years, President Bukele's Bitcoin decision will look like a stroke of genius. Remember, Rome was not built in a day. In fact, it's still not done. Give it a chance. When this so-called crypto winter is over, Salvador will be the richest per capita country in all of Latin America. Oh, and another thing, no matter what you've been seeing or hearing about the people from El Salvador themselves saying that they don't like their president, he ought to be impeached, he's a failure, that's a complete smear campaign too. You want proof? Did you know that Tucker Carlson, you know, Tucker Carlson from Fox and all that, he did a 1 hour, one-on-one interview with President Bukele just 2 weeks ago. You really have to see that interview, because all the stuff I'm talking about right now comes up. If you want the direct link, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. You won't believe it. Now, just as a teaser, I'm going to repeat the first minute of what Tucker Carlson says in his intro, which will in itself amaze you. Here goes. We live in a moment in history where lots of people sincerely despise their own leaders. They don't trust them. They don't believe their leaders are acting on their behalf. They don't believe their leaders are competent or even decent people. And in all the world's countries that are purportedly democratic, you'll still have to look a long time before you find a president in any country that has overwhelming support of all his people. It's very odd when you come to think about it. All right, then, Tucker Carlson goes on to say, today we're going to talk to a president who is, with no exaggeration, the single most popular democratically elected president in the entire world, by far. He enjoys huge popularity measured by outside sources, from the high 80 percentiles into the 90s, as opposed to Biden, for example, whose support hovers in the 30s. The president of El Salvador, Bukele, is overwhelmingly popular by all measures. But why is that exactly? Well, he says, now we're going to spend the next hour talking about that. All right, me, Johnny, here again. That's the intro. So send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you the link to that hour-long, very surprising interview with President Bukele of El Salvador that just came off about 2 weeks ago. And I think if you have any doubts about the whitewash job the media has done on him and his country, you'll soon change your tune. All right, one last thing about Bitcoin. Did you know the following countries all tried to ban Bitcoin. Algeria, Bangladesh, Bolivia, China, Ecuador, Egypt, India, Iran, Kyrgyzstan or some kind of stan, Morocco, Nepal, Nigeria, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and some others. All of their efforts failed miserably, and Bitcoin adoption in all those countries is at all-time highs. While every one of those countries' fiat currency is in the shitter, except for maybe Saudi Arabia. But they're a strange case, an odd case. They all got their gold-plated toilets because they won the petroleum lottery. Enough said about that. All right, yanking the wheel a bit. If you recall, a couple of shows ago, we were talking about going into Costco, or down here it's called Price Mart. We were discussing how when you walk out of the place, they do an honesty check, your receipts against what you got in the cart. And since I haven't been back to the States since 1999, I was wondering if they're only doing that receipt check here in Latin America, or are they doing it up in the States too? Well, I got a few emails from people setting me straight. This one, for example, comes from Jess, who says, "Saludos desde Alaska, Johnny," which means greetings from Alaska. But you knew that, didn't you? He says, "With my experience with Costco in Alaska, Hawaii, Alabama, Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, etc., they all check the receipts upon exits as well. I think it's a corporate policy across the board, at least for Costco's in the Americas. All the best from Alaska, Jess." Well, we got that straightened out. However, I don't think that manual honesty check's going to last for very long. Not after hearing certain info from one of my brilliant engineering buddies about AI. He said they've already got scanning algorithms in the can that they can hook up to 8K cameras. 8K, man, talk about HD TV on steroids. Those things are available. You can buy them. They're pretty expensive now. But they can read a license plate from a quarter mile away. That's intense. Anyway, my engineering buddy, an AI specialist, tells me they've got software now that can spot a person's shifty eyes and nervousness as he rolls his card out. In other words, soon enough, probably within 3 years, he says, when you're in Costco and you finally roll your card out, you'll have one or two lines to go through, a red and a green line, like when going through customs at the airport. The AI that scans you as you're rolling your card out will select which aisle for you. Orwell would have loved that. By the way, speaking of Costco, here's a little Lonely Hearts Club news for you. You know, once in a while I talk about corrupt Boston cop Bob, who's been living down here probably 10 or 12 years now. Well, like most Americans over the age of 40, and ladies too, he's a statistic. He was divorced up in the States. He lost a lot of dough and has been paying alimony a long, long time. And when his kids became adults, got out of college and a life of their own, moved out of the house, etc., he, like so many expats you run into down here, was holding his breath and waiting for that to happen so he could get the hell out of Dodge. So he came south of the border a dozen years ago. And of course, eventually, Cupid fired an arrow. And now, for the last couple of years anyway, he's been married to a Latina. And guess where? 4 years ago or so, Cupid fired that arrow. In Costco. Price Mart. He married one of the tellers. And as things usually go down here, she already had a kid with a deadbeat dad. They were divorced, and even back then, he was 3 years behind on his child support. Pretty normal for Latin America. And here's the part my buddy Bob really hates, and I kind of hate this too. Though it doesn't apply to me, I hate hearing about it. And you hear about it all the time. He tells me, every so often, usually on a Saturday or a Sunday, he says, the deadbeat dad will pop into Bob's residence. He's popping in to see the kid, who of course also lives there. And you know kids, I think she's 10 or 11 years old, they're overwhelmed with joy to see their poppy. Even though the guy's a deadbeat dirtbag, weekend alcoholic, who beat his wife in front of the kid back in the day. The thing is, though, like he says, he can't believe there's no animosity at all between his wife, that's, you know, the kid's mother, and the deadbeat dad, who, of course, doesn't have to pay child support anymore since she's remarried, but he's years in arrears and just nothing but a parasite. So then you might ask, what's that got to do with the porno on Biden's laptop? Well, here's the thing. Oftentimes, I'll be sitting in a little cafe with a couple of expat buddies, and someone will say something like, ain't it a shame the U.S. is becoming more and more third world by the minute? And they'll back it up with facts. There's no shortage of examples, that's for sure. It seems like every week it's something new and even more depressing. Now, wouldn't you know it? Just the other day at one of those impromptu gringo coffee clutches, someone piped up with another reason why the U.S. is going down the tubes. It's becoming third world. He said, used to be up in the States, back in the day, deadbeat dads used to be considered assholes and scoundrels, lowlifes. If you were one and the rumor leaked out, the smudge would last forever. Even your buddies look down on you. But nowadays, people tell me this all the time, too. Up in the States, it's completely socially acceptable to be a deadbeat dad. In fact, I remember when I was living up in Chicago 30-plus years ago, it was pretty much only low-life, undereducated white trash guys and ghetto rats who were in that category. That's why they passed those laws to garnish deadbeat dad wages. Now, that's not to say that lots and lots of guys up in the States don't get the shit end of the stick when it comes to alimony and child support. But still, it's become more or less socially acceptable, whether you can afford it or not. That's so third world and par for the course down here. It seems like every other adult Latino you meet is a deadbeat dad in one way or another. And yet, the thing that blows my mind, like expat Bob says, these guys will just pop in every so often, usually at birthdays and Christmas, eat your food, drink your booze, like the king of the jungle, the return of the deadbeat prodigal son. I've seen it myself. I was at the house of a girl I was going out with, sitting on the sofa, a guy pops in, her kid's deadbeat dad. He sits down at the kitchen table, and the first thing she does is make a plate of food for him. Later on, I found out that guy hadn't paid child support in years. And the kid, jumping up and down, so happy to see daddy. Hail the conquering hero returns. For a half an hour anyway, after drinking a couple of your beers. Anyway, just saying, there's another bad third world trait that seems to have caught on in the U.S. too. Oh, and one last thing before we go. You know, I like to go to rummage sales, garage sales, yard sales, you know. I'm a sucker for those kind of things. And yep, they have them down here too. Anyway, the other day I was moseying on through one and I came across something that really sent a shockwave of nostalgia through me. It was a mink stole. A real mink with the head and the feet attached. Have you seen any of those? Maybe in old movies, but my grandma had one. Ladies, would you wear one? Kind of gross, huh? As a little kid, I could never get used to it. I used to go up to it and try to pull the hair out of it. She'd yell at me. As it turned out, the old lady that was putting on the rummage sale said that her family was very wealthy and hit the skids. Turns out she had a full mink coat, too, but it was getting pretty ratty. She had to toss it. It never made it to the rummage sale. Don't get me wrong. I didn't buy that thing. What for? It just reminded me of an era that will never come back again. So how about you? Have any of you listeners out there ever inherited something gross or weird like that? A symbol? Even an elegant symbol of an age gone by that's totally out of whack with society norms today? Sure, you've got activists throwing paint on people who have fur coats and such, but come on, this thing's got the head and feet on it. Imagine if you wore that thing to an event today. Man, those wokesters would devour you and poop you out the next day.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos!